Good morning, honorable member. Good morning, everyone. After the Easter holidays. We hope that we have been all able to join the rest of the people in worshiping the days of Easter. And we are all back here with all the energy to take up the responsibility that we have been charged upon or called upon. Honorable members and members from the various organizations and the SADA and the Children's Institute on Legal on Women Legal Center. We have invited you this morning so that you can come and share with us your perspective on the budget and the strategic plans of the department.
Excuse me, are we a quorum? Can we proceed with our meeting?
We don't need a quorum.
Oh, we don't? Because we're not deciding any decisions.
Yeah. We don't need a quorum, unfortunately. Let me also welcome the Deputy Minister who's amongst us and say you are welcome, Deputy Minister. Without wasting any time, we will then proceed directly to our business of the day. And our first presenter here will be Molo Songololo, from Molo Songololo, Mr. Patrick Solomon. You are most welcome, sir, and we will then give you this opportunity to talk to us.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everybody. The presentation that I will be doing today is based on a comment on the strategic plan for 2012-13 and 2016-17. Specifically, we'll focus on the children's child rights and responsibilities program of the department. This presentation was drafted by the Children's Institute at Molo Songololo, and we also received recommendations and comments from Childline South Africa, the Children's Resource Centre, the Disabled Action Research, Lingali Consulting, the South African Catholic Bishops Conference, their parliamentary liaison office. We welcome this opportunity to make comment on the strategic plan of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. The plan outlines a number of issues from the vision, the constitutional imperative, prevent situation analysis, performance and organizational environment, the strategic goals and priorities of government, key outcomes for the department. And the strategic plan also presents objectives as identified, right, and also around the key sort of main interventions and strategies for each of these sector-specific sub-programs. And these strategies are focused around advocacy and mainstreaming, the institutional support and capacity building, monitoring and evaluation. The strategic plan also presents the resource allocation and number the staff that's needed for each of the programs, and also it presents the risk management framework. The submission comments specifically, as I mentioned, on Program 3, the Child Rights and Responsibilities program of the department for the specific strategic plan. We also note that the department was established in 2009, and that it evolved out of sector-specific focal points within the presidency around these specific sectors that the department is dealing with. And then also we note that the department moved into its own offices only very recently, as of last year, February. So therefore, the department itself is we note and we acknowledge the department is busy in setting up its program and stuff, and therefore we welcome this opportunity to comment on its strategic plan will inform exactly how the department will set itself up. So what we do know, there's a number of imperatives concerning child care and protection, and I think it's very important that we reflect on these imperatives for children when we deal with issues concerning children in particular, and the kind of measures that can increase their opportunities to survival, right, and increase children's opportunities for care and protection and their development. And these are things, very things that we know. Things like, for example, birth register. And I think that this provides and gives us the basic sort of a footprint for children and access them so that they can have access to and ease of access to support services and be assisted when they need it. Immunization and good nutrition is crucial for children, particularly in their foundation years. It gives them a good start in life and protects them against disease and illness. A safe and caring environment is fundamental. Children are dependent on adults, and therefore adults are responsible for their safety and their protection. Right, so when they grow up in a loving, safe, and caring home and community, right, they are more likely to succeed in life and less likely to be abusive, violent, and to cry, for example. So child protection policies and measures at home, in the school and community is vital for children, and this can also reduce crime against children. Then, of course, also children's education. Both from the foundation phase, early childhood development, basic education, and further education is very, very important. And here again, parents, community, and the government have responsibility to ensure that children's natural talents are nurtured, and that they are educated, they acquire knowledge, and that they are prepared for adult life and for the future with appropriate skills. And this, of course, also makes sure that they don't land up in adult life unemployed and not able to look after themselves, so that it gives them a better start in, a start in life. The enjoyment of basic rights is fundamental, and I think we're all very familiar within our historical background and also what we have fought for very hard, that children's lived environments are crucial to meet the, in meeting their basic needs. So very basic rights for children is what we need, must ensure that children have a loving home, healthy food, clean drinking water, sanitation, the participation of children within family, school, and community life. I think this is very, very important, particularly when it comes to older children. And many parents have major challenges in terms of addressing the issue of participation, as well as our schools, and we ourselves, our civil society, and government. And this ease of access to services is fundamental to ensure that children can exercise their basic rights and enjoy them. So all children must have equal access to the best that we can offer. And then, of course, increasing household income. Children in poor households are more vulnerable and not able to enjoy their basic rights. Children's survival is dependent on the income of parents and caregivers, and social assistance for children when they need it is crucial. Then, of course, also respect for children and service to children. And I think this is one of the things that often we are challenged with when we have the harm that children and trauma that children experience. Again, parents, families, and schools and communities and governments, right, respect children and respect the rights of children. unpack exactly what is that we are talking about and how can we establish such kind of environment. So how are we doing? Right? Last year, February, the Minister of the Department stated in the foreword of the report, South Africa's Children, a Review of Equity and Children's and Child Rights, 2011, that child should be a happy time for all children. It should be a time where children have opportunities to grow, learn and develop, receive love and care, play freely and be active, feel safe and protected, be healthy and be listened to. The very same report paints a very bleak picture of our scorecard. In fact, we are not doing well when we look at how our children are doing. The report highlights that South Africa is a very unequal country and income inequality has increased. Racial disparity remains strong. Black children, African children in particular, are 18 times more likely to grow up in poverty compared to a white child in South Africa today. Child poverty is at 64%. 7 million of our children are in the poorest of households. And maternal mortality and child deaths are high. 1 in 10 children are underweight, so our children are not eating, are not being nourished properly. And 1 in 5 are stunned in one way or another. Although near universal primary school intake has been achieved, the quality of education is a major challenge. More than half of our children drop out of school and do not complete their schooling. 1.9 million children have lost a parent to HIV/AIDS. Violence against children is a serious problem and challenge for us. And then, of course, also sexual violence against children has increased. Corporal punishment, although outlawed in schools, remains to be a serious problem within our schools and also within our homes. So despite these despite the major improvements that we've done in post-apartheid South Africa with the rights, care and protection of children, the above indicators suggest that what we have in place is not working well. So we have laws in place, we have programs in place, but a lot of these laws and programs is not working well. Our interventions are not producing the desired result. Inequalities in access to basic service is a major challenge for most children, particularly poor children, and that it is those children, poor children in rural and urban areas that are not benefiting, right? And most of them have problems in accessing services. So we are not meeting our international obligations and targets that we have and we are committed to. So we have various departments responding to the child rights program and various departments that have to make provision for children. However, there remain many challenges in the coordination and integration of our resources and response and services to children. Another problem that we have, of course, is the present economic climate and the funding challenges that NGOs are experiencing and which specifically are threatening the closure of vital services being provided for by the sector. We know that South Africa is a very, very young population and the child gauge of 2010 and 2011 states that we have about 18.6 million children in South Africa. So basically what we have is that the department is responsible to promote and advocate and monitor the progressive realization of the rights, of child rights policies and programs for the largest group of vulnerable persons in South Africa. Children make up the largest group of persons that have been identified as a vulnerable group. So the department's got a big responsibility. So Section 9 of the strategic plan dedicates itself to child rights and responsibility and states that the department is committed to the survival, the growth, development and protection and participation of all children. And this refers specifically to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and three main pillars in terms of prevention, protection, and participation. So when we look at the strategy, one of our, the first things that we were concerned about was with regard to participation in drafting of the strategy. We many of the responses that we got or wanted to know what was the participation of children in drafting the strategy and what was the participation of the children's sector in terms of designing the strategic plan, and what kind of direct impact did they have in producing this plan. Then, of course, also the big one of the questions that came up from the disability sector is the use of the term people with disabilities. For they argue that it is often assumed and it also, that we mainly talk about adults. And do children with disabilities fit under children or do they fit under people with disabilities? Right? And therefore they suggest that there's a need for us to clarify exactly what we are talking about, but we need to foreground children with disabilities within the department's program, right? And that also that they suggest that the department use the term adult and children with disabilities. When it comes to part A of the strategic plan, which deals with the strategic overview, concerning the vision, the mission, values, and mandate, we note that the mission and the mandate of the department is to promote, facilitate, coordinate, and monitor the realization of the rights of women, children, and people with disabilities to ensure equity, equality, and empowerment of these groups. Participation in decision-making on policies and laws is a vital component of citizenship. Yet women and children and people with disabilities is often excluded from these processes. So we suggest that the department, as mandate, is amended to include, to promote, facilitate, and monitor the participation of women, children, and people with disabilities in decision-making processes. Concerning 4.1, the constitutional mandate, we suggest that the department also highlight the constitutional obligations in relation to Section 28, and specifically also Section 28.2 of the Bill of Rights. And the key principle, the child's best interests are of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child. We believe that this is a very important principle because it will shift the way we look at children, the way we design policies for children with the participation of children, as well as the way in which we design programs to meet the needs of children, right? A reference is made also to non-sexism, non-racism, and non-discrimination. Some of the comments we received from our partners were that children face continuous discrimination because of their age, and therefore they feel that it is vital that non-ageism is also a constitutional value, and that we need to include this in the list that is being provided in that section. Concerning 4.2, the legislative mandate and framework, we suggest that the department includes the following key legislative frameworks concerning children and their protection. For example, the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, which is a crucial piece of legislation dealing with the protection of children from sexual offence, and also provide a provision of services to victims of sexual offences and dealing with offenders. This is very crucial, and we need to identify and highlight this within the list of under the legislative mandate for the department. The Form Publications Act as well is very crucial, particularly in with regard to what's happening with regard to cyber crimes and the way in which crimes against people are facilitated, particularly women and children. The Schools Act and the National Education Policy Act, for example, Immigration Act. We have a lot of people entering our country and staying in South Africa. That's also very, very crucial. But we need to highlight these legislative frameworks as well. With regard to 4.42, at international level, we suggest the inclusion of the International Labour Organization Convention on the Worst Forms of Child Labour to be included, the Hague Convention on International Child Abduction, the United Nations Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, and the protocol related to that convention, the protocol to prevent, suppress, and punish trafficking in persons, especially women and children. Under Section 4.5 concerning court rulings, we note that Section 42.8 of the Children's Act requires that the Children's Court inquiry be held in a room that puts children at ease and is accessible to children with disabilities. And we also know that there has been no progress in this regard in providing such kind of service in our children's courts, and that the implementation of this legislation should be part of the response of the department and to ensure that it is realized. Point 4.6, the planned policy initiatives. This is encouraging. However, we suggest that the department includes this as a key priority action point within each of the sector-specific programs, so that it can be organized and highlighted in terms of the specific policy initiative that the department wants to undertake. Concerning the situation analysis, we note that there's no reference to harmful cultural practices, in particular with regard to issues like Ukutwala, for example, and we've had many debates and many concerns in the last 2 years around the issue of Ukutwala in relation to discussions with traditional leaders and also community, and the clashes that we've had with regard to children's rights and African culture within that discussion. The issue with regard to virginity and male circumcision was also highlighted, that we need to have some direction, and the department needs to lead a discussion and in relation to female genital circumcision as well as male circumcision. We also note, despite the provisions within the Children's Act concerning male circumcision, that we still have a big problem with regard to botched circumcisions that is taking place. And that we have also seen in the last 2 years an increase in the mortality around those kinds of botched circumcisions. With regard to the issue of children and transportation, we note that this has been omitted, and that we feel there's a slow implementation of the policy concerning safe transportation for children to and from school, and particularly children with disabilities, right? Also, the eradication of violence against children is highlighted as a key goal, yet the document is silent with regard to corporal punishment. And we do feel that the department should lead the call to end violence against children in home and starting with corporal punishment, for example. We also note that another gap in the situation analysis is the impact of HIV/AIDS on children. Over 1.6 million children are maternal and double orphans, right? And that the government has not yet put a holistic system of supporting and program forward of supporting families concerning the care of these children, and that the child protection system around these issues are on the verge of collapse. Concerning, concerning 5.1, performance environment, the commitments in this section are supported. However, many promises have been made and lots of money has been allocated. These undertakings in this section, highlighted in this section, need to be part of the strategic objective and be sector-specific. and with clear deadlines must be identified. Thank you. And then we also welcome the intent and initiative to update the National Plan of Action for Children, and this will give us an opportunity to shape the development plan for children, right, and also impact on the development plan of plans of the country. Concerning the country reports on regional and international level, we note that government has not sent in the United Nations Committee on the Rights of Children's report, and that we also note that the African Committee of Experts on the Rights and Welfare of Children's report has not been submitted. We note that the next state party and alternative report on the UNCRC is due in this year in September, in June. And we also note that we have ratified the African Charter in 2000, and that the preparation on the South Africa report on the Millennium Development Goals is led by the Department on Department of Statistics South Africa. And we feel that that the Department on Women, Children, and People with Disabilities should include the participation of this process within its strategic plan, and we would like to see some clear guidelines in terms of implementation and deadlines with regard to that as well. Considering national coordination of the child rights programming, there's a need to clarify and issue guidelines on the role and function of the Children's Advisory Council at national level and at provincial level. In the Western Cape, we note that the Premier's Office disbanded the Provincial Advisory Council. There are also several other cooperative government forums, for example, the National and Provincial Child Protection Committee and the Interdepartmental Justice Forum and the South African National AIDS Council. We suggest that there's a need to coordinate all of these initiatives, and that several cost-cutting issues that these structures are addressing, we need to avoid duplication thereof, and that the department should include this within its framework. Concerning chapter 9 institutions, we feel that there's a need for the department also to identify and develop clear objectives, action points, and expected outcomes in terms of how it will interact with these institutions, and it should be included within the strategic objectives and the specific sector programs that the department deals with, and that the institutional arrangement of how the department will relate to these institutions needs to be clarified. Concerning 5.2, the operational environment, it highlights the issue with regard to funding. We note that the funding model for the department is unclear, and we also further note that one of the weaknesses of the previous structure of the Office on the Rights of the Child was that officials were not senior enough to influence policy and practice within the different departments. And so we note this, and we have concern around the issue of staffing, right? And we note that there's an intent to capacitate and the structure, and but we also want to know what's exactly being done to fill the vacant positions that exist at the moment. Concerning point 9, coming specific to the program, children's rights and responsibilities, again here we note that the budget for children is far less than the budget for people with disability and less than a quarter than the budget for women. We also note that the Gender Commission's budget is part of that that budget for women. However, we do note this disparity in the allocation of budget concerning children in particular. Because we feel that this means that the mandate of the department to realize the rights of children is marginalized. And that it will not have the institutional capacity to implement and achieve the stated objectives for children. The limited budget will impact on the department's ability to monitor the delivery of service for children, effective implementation of the child legal framework, the retention of learners in the school system, and ensure that they complete their schooling up to matric level and meet international obligations and commitment, and the number of key indicators to establish the well-being of our children. So what we feel is that specific priorities need to be identified in this program as strategic targets for intervention must be identified that, so that we can see a shift and identify where the shift is in the government's performance. Concerning section 9.11, the baseline states that children's rights considerations are not adequately mainstreamed into relevant government policies, programs, and strategies. The objective that arises leads to another question that we have for whether the department will have the capacity to facilitate and coordinate the mainstreaming the strategy don't into how the department will address this particular issue concerning the risk in relation to the department being able to monitor effectively and evaluate effectively the children's program within government. Then in conclusion, the strategic plan, while full of good intentions, we feel that it falls short of actually being a plan that speaks to the challenges that children face in South Africa today, particularly concerning the issues of violence at home and at school, the lack of basic sanitation, and that benefits children who are holy rights bearers, lack of access to health care, for example, lack of housing, and the lack of acceptable education. We feel that these challenges face millions of children in South Africa and around the country and will remain unchanged through through vague plans that we have, and that it will place very little accountability in the hands of those who are tasked with maintaining these basic rights for children. Concerning consultation, we feel that more consultation is needed, and that we need to make sure that there's an ongoing process if we are together going to change the lives of children in South Africa for the better. Concerning participation, we also want to know what plans have been made for ongoing participation, particularly of those directly affected and by the sector. Participation of women, children, and people with disabilities, will they engage directly within this process? And then, of course, how is the department going to promote the participation of children in the development of legislation policies by other key departments? Concerning the country reports, again, we feel that the department does appear to be taking these commitments seriously. We note that there's a drafting process on its way, and that they have commenced, and plans for the consultation have been circulated to civil society organizations. But we haven't seen any clear time frames and commitments to make sure that we carry through on these on these commitments, so that we are able to report on the UN CRC and the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of Children. And so we also feel that the strategic plan needs to have very clear guidelines and very clear action points, so that we can be sure that we are able to respond to the accountability that Parliament placed and the people of South Africa placed on the department. These recommendations were pulled together by the organisations that I mentioned earlier on. And so we thank the committee for this opportunity, and myself and Lucy Jamison from the Children's Institute basically pulled the submission together. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your input. I think it actually gives us more insight as to what the department should be looking at or doing. I'm not sure whether before I give to, because we also have briefings to be made. Whether the Deputy Minister would you like to comment before I hand over to the Honourable Members, you know, to interact?
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. I think I'll comment at the end, Chair. It would help if one wraps up all the presentations.
Okay.
It sort of would answer some of the issues that people want to raise. So one wants to create an environment for people to speak, then we'll respond at the end.
Okay. Okay, honorable members, over to you. I hear a morning to the Deputy Minister, and I must congratulate this entity on the very detailed report. And to me, it is extremely worrying, and I need to comment now on this. It is extremely worrying. The issue that worries me most is that we do not adhere to reports of our line departments that need to be included in our ministry. And I don't know, I've never seen a report in the short while that I'm with this committee. Are those departments, are they reporting on issues that they do surrounding children or people with disabilities? I haven't seen anything. And then why are we not even meeting our extended deadlines on very important issues or very important reports such as the UN Convention report? Why are we not reaching our deadlines on these reports? When will this be ready, and why is it not done? Why are these reports not done and submitted? I'll just stop there for a while. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable member. Can are we having other members who would like to comment? Okay. I think that was a comment. Perhaps the deputy minister will then, at the end, when she summarizes, be able to speak to that. Once more, thank you very much. I think you are going to be with us here, and then you will be also able maybe to participate throughout. Thank you. Our next presenter will be Mr. Nkosi from SADA. Is he ready? What is it? Okay. Are you using the PowerPoint presentation of? Okay, members, I think we do have hard copies. Can we then allow Mr. Nkosi to proceed?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. And thanking for the opportunity to come and do a presentation in this portfolio committee around issues of people with disabilities. I think we all know that here in South Africa, the majority of us, people with disabilities, have been excluded in the mainstream of society, and also we have been prevented from accessing our rights, that our fundamental social, economic, and political rights, which I strongly believe, with this background and the scenario that I'm painting, I believe indeed that the recently approved department will ensure that they reverse this situation of being really being excluded and sidelined in the society. The issue that I'm going to cover in this presentation basically are issues from the strat plan and also the issue from the department midterm review report, where one needs to unpack the role of the department, talk about the issue of mainstreaming, and also issues that affect the disability sector. There are quite a lot, but I want to focus on employment, transport, universal access, and the issue of legislation. And of course, finally, I'll talk about our relationship with the ministry and the issue of budget. When the department was established, I think the presidency emphasized two things for me, that there's a need for equity and access to development opportunities for the vulnerable groups in our society. That will include children, women, and persons with disabilities. I think for our understanding, it was indeed established for that purpose, with the role to monitor other government departments to ensure the mainstreaming of gender, children's rights, and disability consideration into all programs of government and other sectors. When it was established, they believed that this will help government to respond to issue of these targeted groups in an integral and coherent manner. I think for us as a disability sector, we acknowledge the role, but the things that we're asking ourselves, will this department be able to effectively monitor all the departments? Because our understanding of how government works, which might be limited coming from the civil society, initially disability was addressed under the president's office, which we believe that it had a stronger muscle. Now disability is addressed under a department. That department needs to monitor other departments. For me, the assistor department. How do they ensure that they can apprehend their assistor? I thought they, with the initial arrangement within the presidency, the president was the bigger brother that they will listen. When I want to talk about the issue of mainstreaming, because we believe that disability should be mainstreamed in all the departments. We want to say, despite institutional mechanism that includes disability focal person in most national departments and provinces, mainstreaming of disability consideration into government priorities and programs still remain a challenge with those issues that I highlighted earlier. I think for us as a sector is the issue of the disability definition. I know cabinet has approved one. If it has been approved, I'm not sure, said to be corrected. A very long definition, but we are not sure whether that department, that definition has been workshopped, has been taken through all the other departments so that they have a better understanding who is disabled, who is not disabled. Create a level of awareness about this definition. And also we believe that it will be the role of this department if it's to monitor effectively, that they should conduct what we call sensitization program that will lead to inclusivity of disability issues. So that all departments here is having a better understanding of this animal called disability. That will assist the department to really focus on their role of monitoring and evaluate. That we believe it will definitely enhance performance, that the targets that they are not meeting as government will be meeting. While talking about targets, I want to highlight the issue of employment. In 2005, Cabinet reviewed and maintained the minimum 2% employment equity target for us within the public service that they should be achieved by 31st March 2010. But we are in 2012 today. The target is far from being met. Currently, the target is standing at 0.9 according to the employment equity report. So as a sector, we want to find out how does the Department of Children, Women, and Persons with Disability make sure that the departments comply with this target. What is a creative recruitment strategy to enhance and retain us in the department? So we'll appeal to the department to share with us their approach and strategy in ensuring that ready they are delivering on this target. When I talk about issue of transport, which for me is a very critical issue, which also for me, it hinders the program of employment South Africa, we don't have accessible public transport. So how do we ensure that we go to work? So we want to know what plans are there to ensure that government is indeed taking this issue of transport very seriously. We believe that at least a guide to transport for people with disability and health issues should be prioritized. We should have a sort of a form of a strategy with regard to that. The key principal issue, which for me it will cut across every issue that will affect persons with disability, is the issue of the universal access. In 2010 and 11, the national government prioritized 75 buildings to ensure that they comply with accessibility standards for us. I'm told there are discussions between the Department of Public Works and the National Treasury to increase this fiscal allocation in the future to ensure the agent remodeling of buildings where services are offered to the public, for example, buildings of the Department of Health, Education and Social Development and such. But how this should be addressed, we are not sure. We'll be very happy that it's meant to highlight how, what is the strategy to address this issue with a clear time frame. Because really, without access, this leads to serious exclusion of people with disabilities in the society. And it will also assist government meeting its employment target. And also want to appeal that the government should come with a strategy that it is going to employ to address this particular issue. The another fundamental issue is the issue of legislation. South African legislative framework across sectors gives effect to political and social economic rights of people with disabilities, as it is enshrined in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution. Also, we've got South Africa that has ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. What plan is there to ensure the implementation of the UN Convention with its all 50 articles? Currently, the department is reviewing what we call the Integrated National Disability Strategy Document. There is a draft disability policy that government is working with it. So we need to find out from government what seems to be the problem, because as we all know, South Africa tend to create very good policies. But the challenge with that, how do we ensure those policies are implemented? We believe that an audit of current legislation is necessary. It's a necessary condition moving towards a Disability Act. We want to ask the department, what are they doing to fast-track this implementation of all these policies, including the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities? I highlighted this issue earlier, whether does the department have teeth and forcible mechanism overseas the department, as I've highlighted in my introduction. Dealing with the issue of housing, the Housing Act 107 of 1997, as amended, provides special subsidies for people with disabilities and includes a clause that looks at physical access for people with disabilities, people with disability with an income of less than $3,500 per month are eligible for government housing subsidies. Our critical analysis is that we don't see that happening. We will appeal to the government, to the department, that it should closely work with the sector in ensuring that we address that issue of housing. The issue of a database of house seekers, the challenges that with that is a long waiting list. And we don't have, or maybe the sector have not seen it, the model of an accessible house. That the sector has been consulted and we have agreed upon it to ensure that, yes, by an accessible house we mean this. And then with that clause, we are worried that if government, Department of Housing, is not meeting its own policy, what enforceable mechanism are there? What benefit measures if it does not meet that? Is the department powerful enough to ensure that they punish, that they don't adhere to policies? Chairperson, I want to also talk about the issue of education, which for us is very critical. It's also a stumbling block in ensuring that we get employment. There's this white paper 6 on special needs of education that leads to building an inclusive education and training system of 2001, which outlines government strategies to transform the current education system to make it more efficient, equitable, and just. Once the current education system is transformed, it should be recognizing the right of all learners to attend their local neighborhood school and receive necessary support. But the challenge that a critical analysis of us of that is that it's the implementation. There's been a white paper for some time, since 2001, and it's not moving towards becoming a document that will be maybe implemented. With that also in terms of education, we are worried with are non-disabled people that do they want to mainstream with us, are they sensitized about our issues? Are also disabled people sensitized on mingling with a non-disabled person? I know there's a model of pilot school that has been used in the special school to ensure that integration. But to date, we haven't got a report in our. Is there any progress moving towards that inclusion ideology that government is coming up? I think the department should play a major role in ensuring that they monitor that process. We've got graduates with disability that are sitting there unemployed. We need to create a database of graduates. There's quite a lot of us that have graduated, but we don't know where people are. I think the department should start working with the institution of higher learning to ensure that they create that database that will assist in. The issue of health, Chairperson, is also very critical. While policies are intended to support access to services for people with disabilities, acknowledge that people with disabilities experience difficulty accessing health care due to systemic problems. Again, there are socio-economic problems, often falling outside the health sector, for example, accessible and affordable public transport. Health issue remains a big problem for people with disabilities. Several complaints have been made to the Department of Health, but we are not getting clear response in terms of the complaints. So we'll appeal to the department to ensure that in their monitoring and evaluation, they ensure that they speak to the Department of Health to ensure that issue of health issues are addressed at local level in particular. That's what I'm referring to. Maybe the department can then help the health department to create an accessible complaint system so that our issues, we know that they have been addressed in a very systematic way. We are not sure about the department's role, whether are there systems in place of monitoring service delivery within the health department. We want to appeal to the department that they need to work closely with the disability sector to ensure that we improve that system. I want to talk about the relationship that we have with the Department of Children, Women, and Disabled People. I think we need to improve, because for me there's lack of proper consultation. We need to improve the consultation process that we are having with this department to ensure that things are running smooth. An example of that was the lack of poor communication that the department had at the Disability Summit recently, that the sector never attended because of poor communication. I think we also need to improve that communication in working with the sector. There's also the issue of the International Day of Persons with Disabilities that is celebrated every 3 December. We are working with government on that, but the communication needs to be improved in terms of ensuring that it is a success. And government, the department is encouraged to create a level of awareness through roadshows so that the community and the department, they know about this disability. Then the medical model will slowly die out and kick out. Let me finally talk about the budget. When you look at the objective in the strike plan of the department on advocacy and mainstreaming to promote the rights of persons with disabilities, the department, it talks about the INTS moving towards the draft national disability policy and the ratification of the UN convention. Our concern as a sector is that the budget, I don't know if it's the right document that I was reading, but the budget is 250,000 to ensure that the issue of policy is being driven and the UN convention. I think for us, it's too very, it's very little to ensure. But if you look at the International Day and the Disability Month Awareness, the government has budgeted 1.4 million. Then you need to ask yourself, the celebrations, are they more important than the mainstreaming and advocacy of disability issues? I think the department will respond to that. With the same objectives, again, of advocacy and mainstreaming, to promote the rights of persons with disabilities. The department talks about 97% of mainstream schools not physically accessible, audit of accessible in health facilities, and the budget is a tune of 1 million. For me, with the limited amount of the budget that the department it has, I think the department needs to unpack to us why a million rand is ensuring that they meet this target, because it is their role. For me, it's the key role of the department. Within that objective, the department also talks about wheelchair backlog of 2011, talks about hearing aid backlog, about 32,039, and it budgets 100,000 for that. I'm not sure whether is it monitoring this one or is going to assist the department, because I believe they are not an implementing agent. Within the budget, again, if you look at the object of monitor and evaluate and report on the status of equalization of opportunities for people with disabilities. To do that monitoring and evaluation and report on this thing, the department has budgeted 1.3 million. I think they also need to unpack to us what leads it to that. The last objective that we highlighted, we didn't take all the objectives, but we focused on those that we need clarity. There's an objective called institutional support and capacity development for equal access and opportunity for people with disabilities. The budget is 450,000 for that. Our critical analysis, and we need the department to unpack to us that. What is institutional support? We don't know that. And whose capacity will be developed by 450,000 budget? We need to unpack the details of institutional support and capacity development. Finally, I think the relationship and engagement with all the GPOs, it must be enhanced. Because as a sector, we believe in government slogan that indeed, working together, we can do more and improve the quality of life of people with disabilities. Chairperson, with those critical analysis to the point, I want to thank you.
Thank you very much. Another well thought and structured input, which I don't think any member can disagree with. without wasting any time, can I get members' comments? As I've already said that, you know, like the first input, I think these are the issues that are actually empowering the committee to engage with the department. Hence, I say, from our side, especially from my side, I feel that most of the issues that have been laid in front of us, we cannot dispute them. It's something that the committee has also been grappling with. And I think it does really confirm. Hence I say thank you very much. I think this is our weapon that will actually really assist us and also assist the department. Because what I heard from your input, some of the issues that we raised as to say, you know, to what extent do we engage, you know, with yourselves, even from the previous presenter, to what extent do we also engage with children? It does really say that you can't talk about us without us. And I think this is a message that we are getting. Honourable Member Lamola, and then Honourable Member Yufodo.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is also a comment. And I need to thank the presenter for the very detailed info that was given to us, information on this. I am as deeply concerned as you are. And I would like when the Deputy Minister speaks, or replies to what ever the presentations were or are, should just elaborate on the mandate of the ministry or of this department. Because as I know, it is to promote the realization and protection of the rights of women, children and people with disabilities. And whilst the delivery of programs to support, empower and develop people with disabilities is shared by various government departments in the social service sector or cluster, the department is responsible for the overall coordination and monitoring of the implementation of the Integrated National Disability Strategy Plan. So I'd just like the Deputy Minister to elaborate more on that so that we can understand clearly what that means and how we fit into the system. But I cannot make peace with not monitoring and seeing to implementation of a special legislation in these portfolios. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Mine is a comment and a question at the same time, particularly on the transport infrastructure. I think that is very, very vital, Deputy Minister. I'm thinking about a disabled person in rural area where we know that the hospitals, the clinics, the schools and all the other areas that provide service to the people in rural areas are normally a little far away. So we would actually appreciate if the Deputy Minister can give us an idea in terms of what is happening in rural areas in terms of transport infrastructure to ensure access of disabled people to different service units. And with the first presentation as well, thank you very much. Minister, Deputy Minister, if you can highlight the human resource strategy that the department has in terms of ensuring that, you know, key positions are filled within the department so that
whatever the vision and mission of this department is, you know, is achieved. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. Can we then move to our last presenter, Ms. Sonia Bonman from Women Legal Center. Are
thank you,
ready?
Chair.
Okay, thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, the Deputy Minister, and friends and colleagues. We're very grateful for this opportunity to make input into the strategic plan for much the same reasons that my colleagues from the two other sectors have already mentioned. I have a PowerPoint presentation available. If we can just take a technical moment and stick it in. Thank you. And I believe that the presentation has been made available to you in hard copy. So firstly, an outline of the presentation. This presentation has been prepared with reference both to the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. And the reasons for this will become clear in the course of the presentation. I'll start off with some general comments on the actual strategic plan, and then I'm going to move on to specific comments around Program 2, which has been identified as the program dealing with women's empowerment and gender equality. Of course, Program 2 consists of three sub-programs, advocacy and mainstreaming, monitoring and evaluation, as well as institutional support and capacity building, in the same way that the other two programs have been subdivided. General comment one, and this concerns the overall strategic plan itself. The plan identifies seven strategic priorities, and they're quite broad. First is advocating for the promotion and protection of the rights of women, monitoring and evaluating gender, disability, and children's rights. The third one is to integrate targets for women, children, and people with disabilities. There's also mainstreaming, strengthening institutional capacity, as well as strengthening participation in strategic bilateral and multilateral initiatives that contribute to the empowerment and equality for women, children, and people with disabilities. Now, these seven strategic priorities are, I think the department is to be congratulated on them. I think they're wonderful priorities. However, given the budget that the department has been allocated, we wonder if perhaps these priorities are not perhaps a bit too ambitious if we look at the level of detail in the actual strategic plan. So for this reason, we believe that resources being problematic has been correctly identified as a risk factor in the strategic plan itself. Overall, we also feel the plan lacks detail on exactly how it's going to achieve these seven strategic priorities. An example of this lack of detail is maternal health. The annual performance plan, the strategic plan itself speaks of a maternal health program that has already been put in place. But there is no mention of such a program in the annual performance plan for the current financial year. So that is an example of how the strategic plan itself doesn't sufficiently unpack its activities in terms of achieving these strategic goals. Consequently, it's quite hard to talk about the strategic plan without reference to exactly how it plays itself out in the department's annual performance plan. And that's where we found a lot more detail in terms of programs and activities. General comment two is about the role of the Gender Equity Bill. In aligning itself with the 12 delivery outcomes of government, The Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities strategic plan specifically looks to the enactment of a gender equity bill. In terms of this equity bill, though, the Women's Legal Center would caution against the following. In our opinion, this particular bill attempts to cover too many topics for one piece of legislation. Secondly, it repeats what we believe is already contained in existing legislation, and this is particularly true of employment issues and those kinds of issues that are already dealt with in the Employment Equity Act. We believe in this regard it would be far simpler to simply beef up existing legislation with amendments.
Sorry, my dear, to disturb you. Sorry, Chair. Can I humbly request without prejudicing the presenter? You see, it becomes unprocedural. I think I can use my parliamentary. I would suggest you skip the whole process about the gender bill because it's not open for public comment. So what is happening is that it's an internal departmental document that's not out for public comment. And you as an organization have the privilege because you're participating in internal discussions. So it prejudices the department if we are going to discuss something that the committee has never even seen, that cabinet has never even approved. So I'm just saying procedurally, it becomes wrong to discuss privileged information. So I'm just saying procedurally, Chair, it becomes wrong to discuss something that's not in the public domain. So if we could just leave that because that is an internal and a task team that constitutes certain civil society have been put together. It's not a public document. It's a very closed, and it becomes just wrong if you have privileged information and you bring it to the public domain when it's not a public for public consumption.
I think we'll agree on that. It is true that the document has not been brought before the committee. The committee has not been able to deliberate on it. So can we shelve that one for now?
Thank you, Chair. And certainly, Minister, we can skip that part then, if you prefer. The issue that I'm trying to outline here is not so much the content of the bill, but more the idea of a bill itself. But I take your point, and we'll skip that. The third general comment speaks about existing legislation. We believe that the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities has a very important role to play in terms of monitoring the implementation of the numerous existing legislative instruments that are already in place. Examples of these instruments include the Employment Equity Act, which mandates affirmative action to benefit women, PEPPUDA, which contains remedies for unfair discrimination, the Sexual Offences Act, which offers protection against gender-based violence, and also contains national directives for the South African Police Service, the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as the Department of Health. And these national directives are quite detailed in terms of how they ask those various service providers to go about dealing with sexual offences, as well as how to deal with survivors and victims of sexual offences. Yet we find very little reporting being done on those instruments, and we believe that the department can possibly remedy that situation and look into monitoring the implementation of those instruments. Also, the Domestic Violence Act, which offers protection against intimate partner abuse, and of course the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, which protects women's resource rights in relationships. The Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities strategic plan also recognizes that its mandate originates partly from this kind of legislation. So, general comment four. The Women's Legal Center is concerned about how the department will assert itself, and I think that this concern has been raised by the previous two speakers as well. The relationship between the department and other national departments, as well as provincial and even local government, is a critical one. Part A of the annual performance plan states that a key challenge will be to coordinate
with other role players, both internally in the department as well as externally with government. Coordination, it seems to us, can only happen in terms of either mutual agreement or with recognized authority. And the commitment of other departments in terms of offering its cooperation and sharing its resources should be recorded in some way. And we are not entirely sure as to what the mode here should be, and that's for the department to decide, but perhaps something along the lines of an MOU. And we feel that the strategic plan doesn't enlighten the reader as to how this will be achieved. How will the department achieve this cooperation and exercise its monitoring capacity without that mutual agreement or recognized authority? The strategic plan also doesn't clarify the overlapping duties of the department and other Chapter 9 institutions, particularly the Commission on Gender Equality, except to say that the Gender Commission is beyond the department's operational framework. Now, in terms of the Gender Commission Act, the department and the Gender Commission does have some overlapping duties, and I think it's critical that the strategic plan engage with how exactly that overlap is going to be dealt with. The strategic plan in its risk assessment identifies lack of compliance and accountability, but we believe that it incorrectly identifies the speeding up of the promulgation of gender equity legislation as a solution. And due to the Minister's request, I won't speak further on that topic. The department must also not just be able to monitor. We believe that the department has an important role to play in making input into debates and issues that are, strictly speaking, within the realm of other departments. There are certain controversial topics currently being debated in many circles that relate to the protection of women's rights. These include things such as the traditional courts bill, sexual violence in schools, one of the big reasons why girls drop out of school, as well as the NSP, the new NSP, the monitoring and implementation of the National Strategic Plan on HIV and AIDS, as well as women's sanitation rights. These are all debates where we believe the department has a valuable input to make, and we believe that the department should be able to do more than simply suggest to other departments what it should take into account. General comment 5. This comment relates to the problem of gender-based violence. Now, the strategic plan states that the department wants to achieve transformation of power relations between women and men. And in terms of this, gender-based violence is one of the primary, most entrenched and pervasive ways in which girls and women are, in the language of the annual performance plan, oppressed, dominated, subjugated, subordinated, as well as excluded. If we take this into account, it appears that the annual performance plan contains very little on exactly what the department plans to do in order to combat gender-based violence. The activities outlined in the annual performance plan contain only one campaign against gender-based violence, and that campaign is aimed solely at the prevention of gender-based violence. And we believe that the department has an important oversight role to play in terms of making sure that the mechanisms in place to assist victims of gender-based violence work smoothly and are publicized in areas where women need the knowledge the most. Gender-based violence, of course, has a place in the work of all social cluster departments, and the department has an important role to play in terms of facilitating and monitoring the coordinated efforts of those departments on this very important topic. So that's it in terms of general comments. To enable us to comment more on the department's specific plans, I now move to the annual performance plan and the specific activities contained in the log frame in that plan. The first sub-program is advocacy and mainstreaming, and the first strategic objective talks about two tools. First, the national policy framework for women's empowerment and gender equity, as well as a draft national gender mainstreaming strategy. We are very encouraged by these two instruments, and we think the department is to be congratulated on initiating them, and as well as finalizing them in the near future, as the plan tells us. And we believe that these two instruments have a better potential than a bill to help the department in achieving its strategic priorities. We wonder perhaps if the resources that have been allocated to this particular sub-program can in any way be linked to the monitoring and evaluation sub-program, as there has been comparatively little resources allocated to monitoring and evaluation itself, and we do believe that monitoring and evaluation is one of the department's core functions. One thing we do like to ask is how will the cooperation of the various departments be guaranteed in terms of workshopping the departments on the implementation of these strategies and how to mainstream gender in all of its programs. And here, taking into account the fact that we have quite a lot of departments in the government, we suggest that the department attempts to prioritize the social cluster departments before moving on to other departments that don't necessarily have such a direct role to play in service delivery. The second strategic objective in advocacy and mainstreaming. This objective talks about the engendering of the growth path. And again, we'd like to congratulate the government on this, and we believe that engendering this growth path plan is absolutely critical. During the analysis of the statistics coming out of Status A, looking at the labor force of the first quarter, we were very concerned about those statistics read together with the job creation and infrastructure development, as has been prioritized by the national government. Specifically because when we're talking about infrastructure development, we're talking about sectors that are not traditionally very easily accessible to women, such as mining and construction. So we believe that in that context, engendering the new growth path is very important. Also, advocating for 50% of the job fund for women as an existing target is fantastic, and we look forward to the department's progress on that score. The program on a strategy for rural women's development is specifically then also aimed at provinces. Our question with regards to this program is, how will this be achieved and thereafter sustained, given the separation between spheres of government in terms of both programming and budgeting? And I speak here about the spheres being national, provincial, and local. Then the last strategic objective in terms of advocacy and mainstreaming. This objective talks about advocacy and social campaigns, and we believe that these advocacy and social campaigns, as outlined in the APP, are very exciting. The one is increasing women's economic opportunities. And we would like to just ask the department perhaps to clarify at whom the campaign on increasing the economic opportunities will be aimed. Will it be aimed at prospective employees or prospective employers? Will it be aimed at entrepreneurs or at the people who hold the purse strings in terms of funding entrepreneurs? So our suggestion for this campaign is that the campaign could perhaps link the public with government funding. There's also going to be a campaign on National Women's Month and a campaign on preventing gender-based violence. We do, however, submit that a quarter-long campaign which focuses solely on prevention is not sufficiently aggressive to send a message of condemnation to perpetrators of gender-based violence, to raise awareness in the public, and to give information about resources to survivors of gender-based violence. There's also going to be an awareness campaign of human rights amongst women, very important to educate women about their rights. But we submit again that awareness of rights is not enough, and women must be made aware of the mechanisms that they can utilize to enforce those rights that they have, and that any kind of campaign around human rights should include information on those mechanisms. Subprogram 2 is monitoring and evaluation. We believe that monitoring and evaluation of women's empowerment and gender equality is the department's core oversight function. And yet we're disappointed to see that there's quite little resources allocated to the first strategic objective in the sub-program. Again, we recognize that the department has its reasons for doing its allocations the way it does. And in terms of the amount of resources that have been allocated, we again suggest, in order to try and make those resources go further, why not prioritize the national departments that should be monitored? Begin with the most important ones. those being Departments of Education, Department of Social Development, the South African Police Service, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Department of Rural Development, Health, Labor, Public Works, and Traditional Affairs. The reason why we choose to list these departments as departments that should be given priority in terms of monitoring and evaluation is because these are departments that are primarily responsible for implementing the national priorities as outlined in the President's State of the Nation Address at the beginning of this year. This specific objective also talks about the implementation of a gender auditing tool, and we believe this is a very good initiative, and hopefully the public will be able to have sight either of the tool itself or of the reports that emanate from the use of the monitoring tool. Again, though, we would like to know from the department how will the cooperation of the provinces be assured in this regard. And in terms of the various provinces that have been prioritized, we see one of the first outcomes includes Gauteng and the Western Cape, and we have suggested that the Eastern Cape and Limpopo be substituted as priority provinces in which to do a gender audit. The second strategic objective in monitoring and evaluation speaks about databases. Now, these databases are crucial and extremely useful, but the budget allocated to this item we think is wholly insufficient for database administration, which is a technical and computer-based skill that requires great precision, constant management, and quite a lot of accuracy. And possibly the department could relook at the amount of resources allocated to this item, given that databases are so critical in terms of monitoring and evaluation, as well as designing programs that are targeted in a sufficient way. We believe it's excellent that priority has been given to provincial databases of labor forces that women do not find easy to access in general. But we would again like to know how the cooperation of the provinces are going to be guaranteed in this regard, because these databases are going to be provincial databases, and they're going to look at the number of women in construction, the number of women in mining, the number of women in agriculture, and the number of women in tourism. And this is very encouraging when we look at StatsSA's labor force statistics, and we see the low numbers of women in those specific professions and categories of labor forces. Then looking at monitoring visits that are going to be performed by the government. The budget allocated for monitoring visits also seems quite low, considering that monitoring visits are exactly how government becomes visible to the people, as well as how officials get to hear first-hand accounts of women and girls' everyday lives, and they get to hear those stories for themselves, and it in turn inspires officials to come back to the office and to design programs that are aimed at the realities on the ground. So from that perspective, we think that oversight visits and monitoring visits are quite important, and perhaps the resources that have been allocated to those items can be reconsidered. All right, then the last strategic objective in sub-program 2. This specific strategic objective looks at reports that are done by the department, and we're talking about reports on things such as CEDAW, UN reports, and similar regional and international instruments in terms of which South Africa has obligations in terms of women's rights. Now, the budget for this particular strategic objective far exceeds that of monitoring visits, and again, here we think perhaps a different kind of a balance can be considered. However, reporting in terms of these instruments and South Africa's progress is a very important role of the department, and it requires ongoing engagement and consultation, which all of the stakeholders here today, I think, have agreed is very important for the department to be able to perform its functions. And, of course, ongoing engagement and consultation can be quite costly. And so, in a way, it makes sense that the department has chosen to budget as it has for this particular item. then looking at reports on ongoing compliance with national commitments by departments. These reports seem to be focused, if we look at the APP, on job creation and economic activity. And again, we want to congratulate the department on deciding to do a very important report in our view. And this report will look at the impact of this national focus that we're seeing on infrastructure development and funding for job creation for women. Given that job creation is the top priority of the nation, as outlined in the President's SONA address, it's understandable that most of the reports on ongoing compliance with national commitments do in fact focus on job creation. Having said that though, we cannot afford to become fatigued with equally important everyday battles. Again, I want to outline gender-based violence here. We see that crime in the country is generally going down, but if we look at the statistics a little closer, gender-based violence is in fact going up. Women's health, equally important. We've seen from the country report on the Millennium Development Goals that our maternity mortality rate remains distressingly high. Also, the education of women and girls. We need to look at what challenges our girls face at school, what discourages them from going to school. And then the last slide before I thank you for your time. Subprogram 3 talks about institutional support and capacity building, and I'll discuss the strategic objective 1 and 2 in one go. And I think here I would like to share Mr. Nkosi's sentiments about a lack of clarity perhaps as to exactly what is meant by institutional support and capacity building. So strategic objective 1 talks about capacity building and gender mainstreaming, as well as gender responsive plans in various departments. And given the budgeting around these particular items with relatively small amounts compared to some of the other budgeting items in the APP, we'd like to know how this particular strategic objective differs from the objective 1 in advocacy and mainstreaming, as well as objective 1 in monitoring and evaluation. And we wonder if perhaps these things cannot be combined to pool a resource of money that will enable the department to go further. Then in terms of strategic objective 2, it's very exciting to see that the gender machinery has been included in the department's strategic plan as a cooperative governance structure, meaning a structure that has more than one government department sitting on it, a structure that includes civil society, and that gives an opportunity for joint decision-making and that very important consultation that we've spoken so much about today. These particular structures, these gender machinery structures, have a great potential to facilitate the programs of the department at all levels of government and to assist with those very issues around provincial databases and local service delivery. Then there's mention of a green economy empowerment initiative in this last strategic objective, and we would just like to know how these relate to institutional support and capacity building, but we're sure that the department can enlighten us to that in a moment. Then thank you very much again for the opportunity, and if there are any questions or points of clarity, I'll look to the chairperson to take those. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sonia. Again, another tool that will actually assist the committee in engaging with the department. And of course, all three presentations, like I said, they also have some recommendations and suggestions, which I think as the committee will also agree with. And I must also emphasize the fact that we might also have some that as a committee don't agree on. But I think this has been a very useful session, which actually will help us to explore and also to engage with the department on some of the issues. Honorable members, any comments from the side before I hand over then to the Deputy Minister to comment and respond to the, some of the issues raised? If not, I will then ask the Deputy Minister to go ahead. Sorry, before you, Deputy Minister, Honorable Lamula.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think it's been wonderful. And it is worrying. What was highlighted here is very worrying, as I said at first. And everything boils down to the department monitoring and seeing to implementation of the sister department. My only question then is, Is it insufficiency that is the problem, or why is it? Is it because of the vacancy rate in the department that we cannot achieve what we need to achieve, and it's only to do monitoring and implementation of the line or sister departments? Is it incompetency, not having the will to succeed or to get to the goals set in our strat plan? Or is it perhaps the exclusiveness of entities or parties that we can draw so much from to make this department success? Should we be more inclusive in this department? And that's my only question. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I did not plan to respond to anything today because the very strategic plan under discussion, the Minister will be leading the delegation on the 25th to the committee to actually talk to the strat plan. But let me just clarify a few things. I think when I made the comment that we should not engage with the bill itself, I was saying that there are organizations that are working with the department. I think the concept of the bill, even the president has given the department that responsibility to make sure that we fast track. And there are organizations that constitute the working group with the department in terms of the bill and have privileged information in terms of what the draft looks like. Hence, I felt it was not correct that we engage on a document or we allow any organization that has the space that other organizations doesn't have to actually even publicly engage on something that Cabinet has never even seen. So I just wanted to say that just as a matter of principle, it really would assist for civil society to somehow, especially because the strong comments that were made about communications, that organizations, when they do get the opportunity to work with us, should actually respect that particular space and that privilege to actually be able to know that some of the information that are being discussed are for internal consumption and not to be discussed outside of the structure that has been established, just in terms of us working together. But I just want to, I'm not going to respond to what has been said word for word, Chair, because the Minister will outline and go into detail on the 25th. So I don't want to actually, but there are certain things that I need to clarify. The first one is the UN and the African Union and the outstanding reports, etc., etc. Let me talk about our international obligations. I think it's important that we accept that, firstly, the department is 3 years old and it is in its second year as an independent department because it was, even after its proclamation, it had 18 months of being in the presidency. So that is the first thing. So we're talking about a department that has literally been operating for 18 months. Now, that does not justify whether what the department did or did not do. But I think it is important for us to just
have that at the back of our minds, and I think one of the presenters acknowledged that. That brings me the first thing to talk about, the vacancy rate. I'll come back to the interview. I'm not sure whether the structure of the department is understood, because the maximum employees in that department that are supposed to be responsible for all three sectors, it's not even more than, at the moment, there's, including the ministry staff, there's like 120 people. Now, what exactly are we talking about? Because I think it's important, as said, that I must elaborate on the mandate. This department was established, and I think we are all clear, to consolidate and coordinate government's program as it relates to the sectors, to facilitate and the promotion and protection and realization of the rights of the sectors, and to monitor and evaluate without taking the monitoring and evaluation responsibility of the MNE department headed by Minister Chabane. Now, that is where I want to start, that our responsibility is to ensure that as Chabane does his work, that those indicators that he sets, that those MNE systems that he puts in place are responsive, not for us to do his monitoring and evaluation, but for us to ensure that as he monitors and evaluates, as the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, he is able to ensure that the indicators on disability women and children are included. So I just thought it's important that when we talk about the monitoring systems for the department, we actually understand and look at it in that context, that there is a fully-fledged department for monitoring and evaluation. So our responsibility is to make sure that that department monitors and integrates those indicators. This department has, amongst other departments, the biggest burden of international obligations. But at the same time, it is forever crushed at every corner about traveling and international. How do you submit a report you can't defend? Now, if you look at even all the questions in Parliament, is you travel too much. Now, the question is, if you look at the engagement of the Committee on the Rights of the Child, they happen like four times a year. Where do they sit? In New York. You look at the state parties for people with disabilities. They meet three times a year. Where do they meet? In New York. You look at the Human Rights Council in Geneva. So when people look at the budget of the department, and I can say I've been placed in terms of the division of labor between the minister and the deputy minister, I'm responsible for disability, for an example. The only amount we have in the disability, and I think the comparison was made if I use the issues of budget and allocations, just so that we are all in the same page. The comparison was made with children. You have 7.2 million allocated for compensation of employees in disability, and then you've got something less in children. Why? Because, just as a typical operational example, is that there is no DDG responsible for children. But there's one DDG responsible for children and disability, and that person's salary comes out of the disability unit. So when we do the comparisons of budgets, we should also look at the comparison of the budget versus the structure of the different units. Because at the end of the day, the program allocations, Chair, are the same. This department does not have money. That is a fact. And that cannot be the minister or the deputy minister's problem. That is this committee's problem. That is Parliament that allocates budgets. So if we are to do, because that is where the fundamental problem is what South Africans expect of us and what we are being resourced to do. And what we did in the APPs, because the stretch time is over 5 years, the APP is an annual. We pulled out of the strat plan what we believe we can do in the coming 12 months, given the work, without necessarily saying the other things cannot happen. And practically, you only have 4 million rand to spend on children. You only have 4 million rand to spend on women. You only have 4 million rand to spend on disabled people. That's what you have. And that is what the committee needs to look at. Because that cannot be the department's problem. We are trying to do the best that we have with what we are allocated. Now, the comments made by the disability, by the children's presenter, just a few things that I want to talk to Chair. The first one is the outstanding reports. The children's report is only due in next year, and that is being finalized. The African Union Council is sitting from tomorrow to discuss the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child. And the department is participating to be able to actually get clarity on the reporting format that is not necessarily available from the African Union itself. And once we've got that clarity, we will be in a position to submit that report. We are finalizing the disability report and accept that the report is late. We are supposed to be submitting our second report, but actually we are on our first report. And as a department, given the little resources that we have, because you see, part of the challenge that we are sitting with, Chair, is that we cannot submit a country report that we have not consulted upon. So that contributes to what we do, because if I can give an example about the disability report, for an example, which we've started, of which the draft, we need to consult disabled people's organizations. And you look at the money that we have, it's literally nothing. Because if we go into the consultation of the report of the Convention on the Rights of Persons, which is what we will be doing, we don't have anything left for anything else. To an extent that we won't even be able to host the International Day of Disabled People. Because those consultations cannot happen in one province, and we have to cover those costs. Then we have to facilitate the implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. For an example, amongst the things that have been raised is the policy. That policy must be consulted upon, so that we can, together as a country, given the fact that we're moving into inclusion, what kind of a policy? Is it an enforcement disability policy that the sector? Do we have the we have the capacity and the human, but we don't have the financial resources. And that is, unfortunately, at the sole doorstep of the department. The power relations between the department and the sister departments. I've been 5 months in this post, and I can say I don't think that is a challenge, because there's broader understanding between cabinet itself in terms of the mandate of the department, and we have not had challenges where we are unable. But at least there's an agreement that we don't implement programs, but we need to ensure that everybody else implement what they have committed themselves. So we are civil society in government, and we work because we're the lobbyists. That is the key function of our work. We're the lobbyists, we're the activists, we're the ones that must make sure that government is on its toes. We like what civil society is doing to parliament. Have we done that effectively? I'm the first one to say, no, we haven't. And part of the reason why we have not, it's obviously financial limitations, human resource, and let me say, Chair, by the 1st of June, all funded vacancies, which is only 7, will be filled. So there shouldn't be like there's a high vacancy rate somewhere. It's 7 people because 3 resigned. So there's only 7 new people that will be joining the department. And there will only be 4 new because the 3 are existing posts. So there's only 7 funded vacancies. 4 funded vacancies in the department for this financial year. So only 4 people will be joining, so we could then together look at what progress are we making. Despite what I have raised and despite the challenges, we are slowly, as an 18-month independent department, finding our own feet. We have developed the MNE system, and yes, as soon as we finalized it and we've been funded by the UN system to be able to, the civil society will definitely get access to that particular system, as we would want them to be able to utilize that system. And that system will be applicable across all sectors. The institutional arrangements, the capacity that we are building, firstly, is of the respective departments. And if I have to pick an example, if the Department of Justice does not necessarily implement the campaigns that they are supposed to implement in terms of legal awareness for women or the respect of the rights or the integration or whatever else, it becomes very difficult. Or if housing, if I pick an example that has been used, if human settlements does not ensure that accessible housing is there, then we are able to get the technical know-how to ensure that that accessible sample house exists, and we are able to monitor local government to make sure the lists. So we need to then train the relevant disability focal people in the relevant department. Previously, what has happened, whether it was the gender focal person, it was the disability focal person, they would operate the same, Chair. Whether that focal person was placed in human settlements or in DGI, they would behave the same. So what we are doing through the machinery that was referred by the last presenter, we are retraining, and that's the institutional support, where we as a department are providing the technical support to the relevant focal people to be able to do what they are supposed to do. So that a focal person sitting in social development would worry about the grants and what those people that are supposed to get the grants, are they getting the grants. Or the person sitting in human settlements who must ensure that each and every house that is being built for a disabled person is actually accessible and meet that person. Or one sitting in public works who must make sure that architectures and engineers and the future of accessible buildings. So we're beginning to now use that, and that's what we call institutional support. We'd be aware, Chair, that we don't have a concurrent function in provinces. There are no MECs for women, children, and people with disabilities, except in two provinces. So what does that mean? It places an additional burden that requires a lot of traveling by the department back and forth to provide the institutional support required by provinces as implementing agents to ensure that when they plan their programs, I mean, I'm talking here, we've done five provinces where we've outlined to the provincial executives what the priorities for the year are so that they're able to partner and plan with us. And that is a back and forth, but we are beginning to have an impact on them. And we are beginning to make progress because they are appreciating. And that is the work that we are supposed to do. The issue of interaction, if you look at, for instance, technical support, we're engaging with universities. And because now our systems are in order, we are now beginning to make the progress. And institutions of higher learning are beginning to support us. Not only in terms of research, in terms of technical support, but also in terms of a document administration, in terms of tracking devices, in terms of training for our own officials to become the ME and technical experts, because that's who should work in that department. But also in terms of tracking our international obligations. And then I'm just scanning through the notes that I was taking very quickly, Chair. I know I chose not to respond with or with to what has been raised, but to just paint a bigger picture. Are we domesticating these particular conventions? Parliament signs and facilitates the ratification of these conventions, and government goes and deposits them, and then government needs to then facilitate the implementation. I mean, I can talk about a typical example, the Children's Act, because I loved the Children's Act as a parliamentarian and woke up. And it was about the Children's Act success relies 100% on coordination. If there's no coordination, there's no Children's Act. And then when the Children's Act was passed, there was a mechanism, an intergovernmental relationship that was supposed to happen. But then the department was born and is taking over that responsibility. And as the department internalizes that responsibility in terms of coordination and developing systems to say, as the coordinating body for intersectoral collaboration, what does it actually mean and how are we going to actually do that? I must say, Chair, the committee will see a lot of change this year because we have finally internalized and we have developed an IGR concept document so that ourselves internally as a department can actually understand and do a quick audit. That's where the audits come in. A quick audit of which department is sitting where with what, so that we can have a baseline. Otherwise, next year we'll be coming here and the civil society will come here and there won't be any progress. And we've decided to also reduce the indicators, and I know that is very frustrating for civil society when they look at the strat plan. We decided to reduce the indicators to something that we can chew. And that is frustrating because civil society is running out of patience, they don't have any. But given the human resource and the financial resource, we believed that let's reduce the indicator so that we can really be judged on what we have committed and have been able to do. And I'm saying next year, Chair, you can pull us apart if for these reduced indicators we have been unable to actually perform better than last year. Then you are able to then say to us, look, guys, you're really messing up. But we're requesting the committee to give us the chance and to civil society to give us the chance to say, let's find our feet as a new department and let's see if we can pull off these indicators that we have so that we are able to ensure that we are finally interpreting and internalizing our mandate and we are able to form the necessary partnerships that we need. And I think, Chair, that is basically, for me, what is important. I've clarified the department's mandate, I hope so. The issues of transport, it's the same as health, it's the same as education. If you look at the disability section, for an example, we're saying that we're going to facilitate the inclusive education. That is basic education's responsibility. Where we come in is for them to make sure that they comply. And this year, for the first time, they are finalizing the strategic document that will support the policy and the costed reasonable accommodation policy. And that is our job, Chair, to be able to shake up everybody and make sure that they do what they are supposed to do. We have shaken up the Department of Transport, and the Minister of Transport will in due course make the necessary announcements, which we don't want to take away from him. And that was done because every department and our existence are beginning to provide the technical know-how to the relevant departments. And we are able to be in government and able to guide the necessary government departments on what is it that they are doing and why they are struggling. The universal access design, I saw here a member asked why 1.4. The universal access design is a campaign where we are trying to educate, even in our plan we've got a workshop for members of parliament on disability awareness so that we can all agree what exactly constitutes disability rights, what exactly constitutes children's rights, what exactly constitutes women's rights, and together which rights are progressive realization and when and where we can meet each other and the partnerships we need to strike with civil society. I think for me I tried to just scan through. So we are, Chair, slowly but surely finding our mandate, interpreting it, and making sure that we are understood. And as I said at the beginning, the power relations, even though it's a line department, its mandate is well understood by our colleagues and the relevant officials, and we do play the overall MNE supportive to MNE department, and we emphasize these particular rights and make sure they are included in the outcomes and the impact can be measured in 2013 as the first year was being under the presidency, the second year was the transition, the third year is the systems which we have finalized. We're going into the new financial year with new systems, more focus, more clarity for the first time. And lastly, that is why there's only one annual report, because the first annual report of the department was included in the presidency. as well as establishing, Chair, the what you call the supportive. And part of the reason, that brings me to the last question, gender-based violence. Part of the reason why the gender-based violence could, where, you know, the women's sector was frustrated is that that particular component in the department is based under Program 1 administration. And that is where the gender-based council that the minister announced will be based, which is they will be reporting directly to the Director General. And the Director General's program is Program 1 under administration. And the Director General will be held accountable directly for issues on gender-based violence as it relates to children and to people with disabilities. Okay, disability, whether disabled children are included, I think children are children first. That's the first thing. And then it is only when you allocate certain tasks or when you engage with certain programs that you begin to label. So, yes, the department, when we talk about disabled people, it includes children, but children are not excluded from the children's unit. And as a matter of practice, actually, the disability unit, the unit responsible for the rights of persons with disabilities, refuse to deal with issues of children with disabilities. We provide the technical advice to the children's unit on issues relating to children with disabilities, but they remain in the children's unit. The same as women with disabilities, they remain in that unit. But when there are disability-specific aspects of their womanhood that comes to play and the women's section does not know how to deal with the women's issues, that is when they come to the Rights of People with Disabilities unit and request for assistance. Lastly, institutional support is also to build the capacity of civil society, Chair, where required. And that question was asked by the disability sector. Yes. Where we are able to, we might not do it directly, but we do facilitate the capacity building of, for instance, at the moment we are busy with the capacity of the men's sector, because we believe you can never get an answer to women. You can't make progress on women's issues unless you empower men. And as a department, we are facilitating the empowerment of men and the establishment of the men's movement, etc., etc. So institutional support also talks to civil society, but also the support the department has to give when civil society interacts. But we are unable to fund, so there's no funding expectation in terms of whether the department is going to fund a particular organization, except when there's direct interaction. For an example, we'll be hosting the disability machinery interaction. We know disabled people's organizations don't have money. We're restructuring the machineries in the department so that you can have civil society and government across the sector side by side. I would not necessarily think, Chair, and we welcome the advice that we must focus on the social cluster, but it would become an injustice to the sectors that we serve, because if you look at disability, they are getting that disability grant, but they want economic empowerment. So why would we prioritize the social cluster at the exclusion of the economic cluster? Because the debate at the moment is not social issues. Yes, the social issues are there, but as a department, we need to make sure women and people with disabilities are able to put bread on their table. And that is what the debate is about. So the advice that we are given that we must prioritize the social cluster might sound okay, but it would be difficult for us as a department to do that, because the economics are fundamental issues. The social issues are fundamentally important. We're monitoring them, but we cannot do them exclusively. Economic and the employment of women and the economy and the bread and butter issues is what is fundamental now. Disabled people want jobs. They don't want disability grants. So we need to make sure as a department we are able to ensure that every economic, the job creation, whatever government does, it is able to create the necessary jobs for the sectors that we represent. So it becomes a bit of a challenge that we would be able to focus on one cluster as compared to the other. And that's the one thing. And secondly, if you look at gender you look at violence against women, children, and people with disabilities, it falls under the justice and, what is it called now, GPS, justice and peace cluster. And if we lose that cluster as a department, we won't have an opportunity to be able. And you look at the M&E issues, they sit at the governance cluster. We can't lose that cluster because we have to monitor and make sure that everybody in government. So there's only 100 people working there, 20 is the ministerial staff. So these 100 people have to support the two of us who must pull ourselves in this across these four clusters, and one DG that must make sure she attends all the clusters. But we are making the necessary progress, and I thought that I needed to just clarify that the issues we deal with are spread all over the clusters. So it would become very difficult for us to focus on one cluster. Thank you very much, Chair. As I said, the minister will be here. I don't want to take away her thunder to clarify. She will be here on the 25th at your invitation to clarify and get deeper into the strategic plan and the priorities. And I want to present my sincere apologies for that day in advance, because I will be doing what I'm supposed to do, which is briefing the Eastern Cape Provincial Executive on these very priorities. So we had to split ourselves because we are busy briefing the Executive Councils, which is the Premiers and the MECs, on the priorities. And the 25th is the day for the Executive of the Eastern Cape to be briefed on what are the focus areas so that we are able to work hand in hand with the provinces. So on that day, the Minister will be here, and I will be in the Eastern Cape to brief the provincial executive and continue the campaign that leads us to working better and forming the necessary partnerships with the provinces. And the same exercise is being implemented with the district municipalities to make sure that we all move together for the realization of these rights. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for the in-depth comments and response. And I think I must in advance also admit that the office of the minister and the office of the deputy minister was not formally invited. And we would really want to thank you for really being here, because you have been able to clarify some of the aspects. Like I said, that it's not everything, you know, that we might agree on, especially with the last one that you made of prioritizing on the social cluster. I think the committee itself pronounced that we don't want as this committee to be classified under that cluster, you know, of social cluster, because then it will disadvantage the committee. On actually focusing on other issues like economic issues, whereby women really need also to focus or to be empowered. So thank you very much. And also the clarification about the budget. Yes, it's true. It's the responsibility of this committee to ensure that, you know, the department, we know that the budget is never enough. It's never adequate. But I think given the enormous task that has to be carried by this department, I think they really need to get more finance so that they can be able to do that. Indeed, there was an outcry about traveling, you know, spending money on travel, forgetting that it is the responsibility of this department to move around all the provinces as well, and also to attend those meetings that you also highlighted on. Okay.
Mine is to the minister, and it relates to the budget. And I'd like to be corrected if I'm wrong. Departments receive funding based on what it submits to National Treasury. Is there no other opportunity, or do you not have any further opportunity to ask or to request more funds, seeing that the budget is inadequate? That's my one question. And then on reports not being submitted on time, surely one needs to put a time frame to these issues, to these reports, knowing that it needs to be scrutinized by provinces. Then one needs to start in time to have your report submitted on time. I would like to know, I would like to hear from the Deputy Minister what the viewpoint on that one is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair.
Deputy Minister.
Oh. Thank you so much.
I think regarding the budget, we deliberated on that extensively, you know, the previous year. And the department clarified to the committee that they did submit their budget. But it's not given that if you submit your budget, you'll get, you know, the amount that you requested. And it was drastically cut. And that was, you know, presented to the committee by the minister. And what was the second one? For the report, I don't know whether maybe you want to respond to that because I... Yeah, okay.
Let me also talk to the budget, Chair. I think there's just two things I want to emphasize on the budget. When the department was established in its original form, so that we all find each other on the budget issue, when the department was established, it was established as a ministry, not a department. And the ministry that was going to be in the presidency, which meant that all the support, what we call the support, your procurement, your human resource, your financial management, all your support, mainly were going to be there of the presidency. But when the decision was taken later, that the department, that a department be established, then the shortfall of the biggest shortfall of the department in the budget is compensation of employees, and Treasury is slowly providing that, because now the department has to establish all those support services that the department was not going to establish. Yes, we have submitted our additional budget. Even at the moment as we speak, Chair, we have submitted to the rollover process, especially because my arrival as well as a disabled person in the department, I was not budgeted for because I was not there. So you would see that, because I also bring reasonable accommodation issues into the department space. But also the other aspect that needs to be noted in terms of the department's budget that we need to also understand, that I know the minister is, but I want to, it's reasonable accommodation. This is the department that deals with disability, and we can't be chased to meet the 2%. And the 2% comes with reasonable accommodation needs that needs to be put in place, which differs, and because we add 5% of disabled people employment, which brings the reasonable accommodation. At the moment, the reasonable accommodation policy is what we are pushing to finalize as a department with the Department of Public Service and Administration, so that blind people are able to get what they need. The sign language interpreters, Betty and them next to me, are able to be there in the department. Those are additional posts that were not necessarily anticipated, but also the applications of disabled people cannot be determined, so you can't plan for that in advance. So yes, all of those things, and Treasury is slowly opening up. And also the mandate of the department not being understood. Now it's being understood by Treasury. We're slowly making the necessary progress that we wanted. We have put time frames to the budget, to the reports. I can confirm, for an example, that we will be going to New York as South Africa in September to account for a number of articles at the state parties meeting on what the country has done on disability, for an example. And I can confirm, Chair, that the disability report is going to come to the committee for the session of July. It's now in the provinces are busy consulting with it. The district municipalities will be consulting, and will be depositing that report as soon as the committee itself has engaged with the report before we leave
for New York on the 12th, on the 10th of September. So there's deadlines. We're working backwards to say we don't want to arrive in New York before the report is deposited, because we must go and account as a country. And the children's one as well, the National Plan of Action, the president will be launching that on the 31st of the consultations and all of on the 31st of May. So there is time frame, and we can make the operational plan available when the minister comes, so that there is certainty in terms of we are on top of these reports and we are busy producing them. And it's part of what we will be asking Treasury to give us additional funding, and hoping that the committee itself will support us in the bid to get additional funding to enable us to submit all the outstanding reports and make sure we consult, and that the committee program will take into consideration the public hearings of all the said reports in the committee's program. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Let me also thank all the presenters and also the honorable members and everyone who is here with us. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. haven't tried to stop it. It's still moving.
Yeah.
I see.